I want to talk to you about the anatomy of universes. How a universe comes about and why. What occurs when it has come about. I can answer the last question first and tell you that what occurs when it comes about is you right where you are, doing what you are doing, thinking what you were thinking. That's what comes about. Now let's go into how it came about. And we will discover that the process is extremely simple. Extremely simple. There are two sides to this picture. One is the mechanical side, and the other is the consideration. The consideration actually precedes the mechanical. So we have to take up the first postulate, which brings about a universe. And the first postulate one would have to make a universe, would be, I don't know. The next postulate he'd have to make would be, there is something out there. And the next postulate he'd have to make would be, what is it? This is the consecutive sequence of beginning a universe. He has to assume that there is something he doesn't know. Then he has to place something or nothing out there. And then he has to ask of it, what is it? And he gets the mechanics of perception. The mechanics of perception then consist of putting something out there and then wondering what it is. The gradual sequence of this brings about a condition whereby he continues to postulate, I do not know, and continues to put nothingnesses out there, which he says are somethingnesses, and continues to bring in things, and he gradually builds up and out space. He has space out there, you see, and he's pulling in things through the space, and you get a condensing effect. And this goes then into this. An individual believes that this condensing effect is caused by another determinism than his own. Because each time he said, I don't know, put something out there, and brought it in, each time that he did this, he of course cut down the fact of his own knowingness anew. So consecutively, the more he postulates, I don't know, and the more he brings in, the less he knows. And the more he thinks he has around him to know about, because his motive in pulling in anything to him, which he has created in space and pulled to him, that is to say he created the space by creating this thing, the more he pulls this in, the more he thinks he has then in his vicinity, which he doesn't know about. You should see this quite elementary. Until a preclear, he has become a preclear after a few trillion years of this idiocy, the preclear at length believes himself surrounded by things he doesn't know about. And that is the end product of it. Now he expects you as an auditor to permit him to know about these things. Now the question is there anything there to know? Well, yes, there is. There's the sequence of postulates which bring about this unknowing state. That's really all there is there to know. Naturally, in view of the fact that he kept putting things out and then saying he didn't know about them, a condition came about whereby he had to believe that there was some significance in these items which he was bringing in on himself. There must be some reason to look. Now, the first reason to look is it is beautiful. And this is the first introduction into reason. It is beautiful. I am looking at it because it is beautiful. And that is the first reason there is. In other words, the whole operation gives me pleasure. Of saying, I don't know, and it comes. The reason I'm doing this is because it's pleasurable or beautiful. The next thing, when he has exhausted that, the next thing he gets into, it is significant. And we have a condition whereby the preclear is totally sold, utterly, on the fact that all these things that he has brought in had a significance in them. But let me tell you something. He neglected, from first to last, to put any significance in them. And if he didn't put any significance in them, there isn't any significance in them. Now we get, that's just one universe. Now how does it get into a problem of mix-up? It gets into a situation of mix-up on the basis of agreement. And the first agreement is, I don't know. Two people agree they don't know. And then two people, or whatever you want to say, two people, two beings, are agreed then on this first basis. Because their first point of association has space in it. And so we get into ARC after space. Space, then ARC. Each individual is condensing himself. He's never expanding himself. His final product, as a cycle of action, is condensation. You see, to create is simply to put something out. The first condition of creation is space. And then, now that it's out there, let's look at it. Bring it in so we can look at it. And the next step is, it's surviving, which is simply another statement of, I am looking at it. It is surviving, I am looking at it, same thing. And finally, destruction occurs when he has brought it all the way in. See, when it comes all the way in, there is no space, so of course it disappears, and that is destruction. Well, when he fails to bring them all the way in, but just brings them closer, the cycle of action is incomplete. And your preclear is hung with all of his compounded, incomplete cycles of action. Every cycle of action which he ever started and didn't completely finish stayed there. Because the center of it, of this action, this cycle, is, of course, I am looking at it. It is surviving, you see. If he brought it all the way in, he would have taken all the space out of it. You see, because space is made by the fact that he has put it out, space being a viewpoint of dimension. All right, the space was created by the fact that he put it out. Therefore, the space would disappear on the fact that he had pulled it all the way in. Well, he never pulls them all the way in. I say never. Yes, he very often pulled them all the way in. But, I mean, what's giving him trouble are those things which he didn't pull all the way in. They are not totally destroyed. Now, you as an auditor come along, and he asks you to finish these things. Let's destroy all this stuff that I don't know about and it's driving me mad. See, let's destroy it all. How would you destroy it all? Well, there'd be two systems of destroying it. One would simply be to restore his ability to create and go through the cycle again, and the other one would be simply to bring it all the way in. Therefore, putting up eight anchor points and bringing them in, and eight anchor points and bringing them all the way in, and eight anchor points and bringing them all the way in other words, the remedy of havingness, is this cycle. Therefore, Preclear feels much better after he's put up anchor points and brought them all the way in, and anchor points and brought them all the way in. Of course, they really didn't amount to a mass after he got them all the way in. What they amounted to, of course, was a disappearance. Now, there's the cycle of action. There's lookingness, there's perception, there's space, there's your primary postulate, so forth. The consideration that lies above this is the consideration that one must put something out in order to consider. That's an operation, a mechanical operation. Nobody would ever have any space if he had never put anything out to look at. Now let's get down to the first and foremost game which a Thetan plays. The first and foremost game which a Thetan plays is surprise. It's a game called surprise. And I've just told you the mechanics of the game called surprise. One of the more complex ways of doing it is for the Thetan to mock up a small box with something in it. Then he forgets, you see, what he put in it, and he opens the box and he is surprised. This is his action. And this gives him the sensation of not having known and having found out something. What did he find out? He found out something that he knew before. The only way he could experience the sensation of finding out was to postulate that he had found out. So we get this dizzy little game. You wouldn't think a game like this would become serious enough to wind up on torture stakes under the grinding treads of giant tanks and under the high plume of atom bombs. You wouldn't think it would amount to diphtheria, torture, infidelity. You wouldn't think this would ever amount to such an end product. Well, it does. Interpersonal relations seem to be, to a Thetan, taking a shallow look at this, you see, considering it all over again, interpersonal relations seem to be the trouble. Well, if he looks a little harder, he'll find out that really the trouble is the physical universe. Well, that actually is a little closer to what the trouble is. But most of the people that you have anything to do with will pick on first the third dynamic, interpersonal relationships, as being responsible for all of their trouble. In order to understand the third dynamic completely, you would have to understand that a Thetan is confused about who is who. His basic confusion, who is who, is manifest under this. He can duplicate himself. He can put himself out there in space and be as alive out there and where he is, too, at the same time as where he is. He can duplicate himself, in other words. One Thetan, there can be then two Thetans. And each one of these Thetans have all the characteristics of the original Thetan. And then these two Thetans can duplicate themselves and have all the original characteristics of themselves, but be somebody else too. So we get into valence trouble. This is one of the basic capabilities. The second we introduce duplication, however, we introduce space. So the second a Thetan began to be somebody else and himself too, there was space in the matter. Well, he did this, and then he didn't sort of reserve anything for himself, you see. He reserved no special characteristic or weapon for himself, and he is opposed by an opponent who is just as good as he is. Well, you get an agreement. Now, it'd be very, very simple for two Thetans to exist, you see, and each of them duplicate, and then get totally confused about whose duplicate what was. And so they simply put a forgetter in there, and every time they duplicate, well, then they forget that they have duplicated, you see, and that isn't themselves anymore. And very cute, but very confusing. Later on, your preclear wonders whose valence he's in. He's confused about it. There's no reason to be confused about it. He is where he sits, as capable as he ever was, as able to duplicate as he ever was. But here we have, as we look this over, a compounding problem, which results in this dwindling spiral. He's going to get worse and worse and worse, not better and better and better. And his foe is boredom. He feels that if he gave up any part of the game which he has, he wouldn't have any game at all. And if he had no game at all, there would be nothing for him to be interested in. There would be no further responsibility. There would be no further interest, and this one, most of all, no reason for existence. His biggest scarcity, because it doesn't happen to exist at all, is a reason for existence. This is his biggest single scarcity. And if you want to know what scarcity is, just say reason for existence, and you have it. Now, those two phrases interchange. scarcity interchanges with reason for existence. An individual begins to have things. Why does he have them? A reason for existence. An individual begins to take on form and shape and compound universes and enter universes and exit from universes and so forth. A universe is simply a point of view from plus the space and objects which are put up there to view. When he agrees with some other Thetan, the agreement may overbalance and he may begin to see the other Thetan's mock-ups better than his own. When this has advanced considerably and when he is on a basic agreement with an awful lot of Thetans, you have a universe such as the physical universe, which is a very, very strong illusion. It's very solid. It's very, very solid. And he's on good common meeting ground there. Everybody agrees that it exists and it's perfectly all right to see it. They do not agree, however, that it's all right to see each other's mock-ups, because if you started seeing in 3D somebody else's mock-ups, this would mean he was bigger and tougher than you were, and you would be in his universe, and this would make him boss. So people avoid doing that, and before they will do that, they will shut off view of all and any mock-up. Well, how did they get into this situation? They kept putting out, I don't know, and I pull it in, and I don't know, and I pull it in, and one day, this I don't know, you know, and then they put something out, and what is it, they say, and then they pull it in, and somebody who was in communication with them, you see, we got an interchange, we had an agreement, and then two Thetans could put out this somethingness and bring it in, we would get this. Not only can they duplicate and make two more people, but in this particular case, much more interesting, they get what they brought in confused. You see, here we have Thetan A and Thetan B, and they put out something to know about, which they don't know about, see? And then they say, what is it? And then they bring it in. And Thetan B and Thetan A can then conceive that B has brought in A's and A has brought in B's. So they've got somebody else's don't know about. They've got their own, really. But now they've said, I have somebody else's, and so we get the interweave of interpersonal relations. It just goes from that point. You've got something of mine, I've got something of yours. You put something out, and then I took it. And I put something out, and you took it. We don't have just interpersonal relations. We have business, we have games, we have almost anything you want to derive from that particular echelon. But remember, basically, that there was nothing put out, but an idea that there was something put out. Remember this. All right, there sits your preclear. He is surrounded with things he doesn't know about. He is totally fixated upon a mystery. What is the mystery? The mystery, basically, is what he forgot that he put out, that was called then somebody else's, that he then pulled in, that now he doesn't own, that isn't his, and is still standing there, an incomplete cycle of action, because it still exists, saying, I'm significant. Now, he has to find some kind of a significance for this. Now, you could process people on significances forever. And you would find that the more significances you took away from them, the unhappier they would be, because the scarcity is the reason why. Best way to settle the whole thing, you would run him back into all of his I don't knows and knock out all of his forgetters if you fed him enough meanings or reasons why to compensate for all the putouts which he has done. They didn't have anything in them. There was nothing to look at. There is nothing in the box to surprise him unless he says there is something and says he is surprised and says he's forgotten that he put it in the box and now he's surprised that it's in the box. All right. He put something out. And then he said, I wonder what that is. Well, did he in the first place say, I am now going to put out a horse. Now I am going to wonder what the horse is. No, he did not. He didn't put the significance into it. What he has been bringing in consistently and continually are things without any significance. There's a terrible scarcity for this because there must be some reason why. Because that's basic and inherent in all the postulates he's made. There must be a reason why. See, there must be something there to look at. There must be some reason why this is here. This is just the game postulate which is made to make the game possible. And there is no reason why. So the person who goes seeking the reason why goes down, 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 down. And he finally comes out the bottom and finds nothing. Which is quite a joke, really. Now, many a philosopher in many an age has gone on this track and has looked for this deep, deep, deep significance. The fact that philosophic books are quite commonly written in the most authoritatively pedantic language imaginable is simply a demonstration of how much we can try to add significance into insignificant things. If you were to open A Critique of Pure Reason by Immanuel Kant, the great Chinaman of Königsberg, you would know exactly what I am talking about at this moment. Never has so little been said at such length and complexity. And the fact that he had said nothing when he finished up did not become apparent until he finished his second book. His first book demonstrates conclusively that there is an innate morality to man for which he is not recompensed whatsoever. It's just as innate in man. It's an inherent factor. Like the weight in a stone, it's just there. He is innately moral. And his second book demonstrates conclusively, all the way through, that he gets paid for it. And that this is why he does it, because he gets paid for it. This was in 1790, and the whole field of philosophy has been so overshadowed with this profundity on the subject of nothing that nobody has done anything really since in the field of philosophy. Anybody writing since Immanuel Kant has sort of stumbled along apologetically. They knew they couldn't make a German participial adverbial clause phrase sentence. They were in apathy. Anybody who could be that complex could never be bettered. There's the reason why. It just doesn't amount to anything. But boy, it's certainly heavy, weighty, complex, and baffling. Don't forget that one. It's baffling. Utterly baffling. And there sits your preclear. And if you could see a preclear as somebody who had several thousand copies of Immanuel Kant's Critique of Pure Reason strapped intimately to every part of his bank, you would have a very clear picture. It's a weighty tome, and there's nothing in it. Except his total conviction that there is something in it, that it does have significance, and that somebody else put it there. He's sure somebody else has moved these significances in on him. And he's sure there's something there. Well, all the postulates whereby he is so certain there is something there are answered by curing his scarcity of reasons why, by creating an abundance of reasons why. You can just have him mock these up, and very strange, peculiar things will happen. These pieces of energy, these masses of energy, and so on, will start to disintegrate. Bits of blackness that he's never been able to touch before will start to come apart. Any process that we have known these many years have occasionally found such a patch of blackness utterly resistive. But yet that patch of blackness will come apart by mocking up an introduction into it of reasons why. All you have to do is get a flood of reasons why going into it, and it goes to pieces. Now, what do you mean, reasons why? You mean, do you actually give it a reason why? Do you quote a reason why? Do you state a reason why in order to mock it up and put it into that black spot? No. That's the trick, because the basic postulate is simply there must be a reason why, and no reason is stated. And the greatest scarcity, of course, is the resulting reason. He has postulated that something existed, something existed, something existed, something existed, something existed, and that something never did exist anywhere along the line. So, of course, it is the greatest scarcity there is. Now, just running this, just as given on some preclears, just that will exteriorize them. I mean, the proof of anything like this is its workability, of course. Now, this is the anatomy which precedes space. I must cut down my knowingness and produce some random action so that I will have a game. There must be then some kind of a compulsion to have a game. No, it's totally self-determined, just as you'll find the core of anything continually self-determined. He says, I must have some action, some randomness, some game, some space. It's a good thing, space. And sure enough, it is. So he enters into this game very wholeheartedly, and every time he puts out something to view, he, of course, has put out nothing to view. And when somebody else put out something to view, nothing to view. But he believed that there was somebody else more powerful than he, therefore he believed that there was something there to see, so therefore he saw it. On neither side of this was there actually a reason why we had to put something out, until in desperation he began to add reasons why. But I say, in the basic operation, he put something out and said, now I don't know about it, and so therefore I've got to add the reason why. He will add the reason why sooner or later. When he gets into a civilized state, then really, for the first time, when the complexities of existence become very great, then for the first time will he add real significances, which are actually just shadows, but they're real. You know, he accepts these as real significances. A chair is a chair. Its significance is that you sit in it. See? This is what I am supposed to do with a chair. And we have entered the game into the stage of now I am supposed to. And the first I am supposed to is now I am supposed to see. Before you perceive a chair, you have to say, now I am supposed to perceive a chair. And you perceive it. Before you perceive a mock-up, you have to put the mock-up there. Now this is the rule of the thumb of all processing. That an individual is seeking further significances in his case, and will continue to seek further significances in his case until his scarcity of reasons why is remedied. That's not remedied by explanation. You evaluate for him. Of course, you've just given him a bunch of specious reasons why. There isn't a mechanical way to address this whole problem then called aberration. The reason why is, of course, his basic purpose. The failures of man are simply those points on his track when he has suddenly observed that his purpose, his postulated purpose, was non-existent now. Somebody has pointed this out to him, or he has pointed it out, something of the sort. His postulated purpose, his straight course, can no longer exist. And that itself is failure, which is merely a postulate. What is his intention? What is he doing? What is his goal? Well, individuals after a while begin to believe that the goals have to come from an exterior source. And this is the make-break point of the case. This is the hump. When they hit that point and go over beyond it, they're in bad trouble. They become men, they become animals, so forth. That's the make-break point.